Yo, this hot, this the spot, there it is, pod.com. We're interviewing the best comedians, so tune in quick and get your ears receiving them. We talking about life and life to stream right to you, from the microphone right to your home, dude. Side note, this might get embarrassing, but no, don't sweat, yo, cause there it is.
Welcome to the There It Is podcast, a comedy podcast to help you find your inspiration. I'm your host, Jason Farr. Let's do this. Thanks so much for joining us. We have a very fun chat with the Of The Show gang, nay, Of The Show bridal party. Trey, Rob, and Justina are here to talk all that pop about the Oscars from a couple of nights ago. We're still talking about it. And we talk about our favorite and least favorite moments, as well as moments we thought were a fun surprise or just a surprise. Why don't we just get right to it? Here's my chat with the Of The Show bridal party. Welcome back to the show, Of The Show gang, also bridal party of the show. At least three members, four members, if you count me.
I feel like we're both definitely in the bridal party.
I would imagine. We've got best friend and groomsman of the show, Rob.
Jason.
Uh-huh.
All this, it's not your fault. It's not your fault. And scene. Thank you.
We've got brother / best man of the show, Trey.
I'm just Trey.
You're Trey enough.
I'm just Trey. And of course, we've got fiance of the show, Justina.
And my eyes see, I'm happy to be here.
And of course, it's me, the host of the show, Jason. The most important moment in the history of the whole epic world.
Give this man an Oscar.
I will always hate on that line reading from Oppenheimer, and no one's dying on this hill with me, but
it looks like, sorry, just very quickly before we pop the talk, it just it seems like he's making fun of actors in dramatic movies. It doesn't even seem real.
That is an actual line reading of Matt Damon's in Oppenheimer, and let me just tell you, it's not a good line. And when I heard last night that the movie was written in 6 weeks, and I was like, oh, that explains that line at least.
How did they write that? Isn't that book like 18,000 pages long? Yeah. I mean, yeah. Because I thought Nolan had been working on it for like 10 years. I mean, I could be wrong, but it was like a long time.
Yeah. I wouldn't be surprised if like he read it, was like working thoughts together, maybe like planning it out, and then sat down to actually write it in 6 weeks. Yeah. But the other stuff took maybe a long time.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember what I read about when it was brought to him. I don't think it was that long ago that it was brought to him.
Okay.
He had studied Oppenheimer for stuff like Tenet. So he was
I think maybe somebody said like that took him 25 years to write the book. Was that it?
I wouldn't be surprised. So let's hop into the topics. And as you can tell from all this Oscar talk, and by the title of the episode, frankly, that we're talking about the Oscars. Oscars 2024, where Oppenheimer reigned supreme. But what we're going to start with here is whether or not you were surprised by anything. We'll start with you, Justina. Was there anything you were surprised about?
I definitely am of the surprise that Emma Stone won. Yeah, party.
That was mine.
Guess you could say I'm in a club with Emma Stone, which is kind of cool.
She was pretty surprised.
And I don't know. Besides that, it's like a pretty standard Oscars to me. I can't think of any award that I was like, whoa, that one. But that's
where I was, because everyone was saying Lily Gladstone was going to win for best actress. Mm-hmm. And so, or that's not how they worded, outstanding performance by a lead actress in a film.
I'm glad you said that, because earlier I didn't know what you were talking about. So when you worded it that way specifically, now I get it.
Hey, Justina. Happy International Women's Month.
Yeah. Thanks. I got a lot to say on this pop talk. So thank you so much.
I do the work, guys. I do the work. As a father of a daughter, I do the work. Okay.
Absolutely. Every single day.
Every day. God damn it. Every day.
No. But yeah, I mean, of course, everyone calls it Best Actress, but the Academy does not. The Academy calls it Best Performance by a Lead in a... Mm-hmm. Anyway, it was too long. Yeah, everyone was saying Lily Gladstone was
better. Well, she won the SAG.
Right.
So, and then, Golden Globe, yeah.
Well, they split.
It's split in Golden Globes because they split in film categories.
Yeah.
Comedy and drama.
Got it.
But there had been other awards that Emma had won too. So I think I was listening to one of my favorite podcasts this morning talking about it. And they said it was a lot more neck and neck than people realized.
Right.
And like, if you looked at like Oscar betting pools, that was the only race that was like really tight.
Yeah. So I did read in, I believe, the New York Times that the apparently failing New York Times continued on for 8 years after they were originally called failing New York Times. Anyway,
it's crazy how that works.
it's crazy how like that wasn't true
at all.
Said by a person who tells so many truths. They said that SAG is the most accurate predictor.
Yeah.
And Lily Gladstone won at SAG, so I think people were given the edge, but that article was also saying that it was like kind of up in the air. And they were saying, we're going to say Lily Gladstone, but she didn't win.
Yeah.
Rob, did you have any other things that you were surprised by?
I think this is going to sound I was surprised at like how good the show was. Like it was probably one of the best Oscars in like 10 years.
It was pretty tight in how they presented.
It was tight in time.
Yeah.
They did a really good job of like knowing who was good at what when it came to presenters. They didn't make like think about like the Golden Globes and like obviously like Kevin Costner had never seen Barbie and he was trying to like compliment America about her, you know, amazing monologue. And you know, it was just awkward and this other, you know, and just in general, like, I mean, I guess it's easy for Jimmy to seem like Billy Crystal when the last host we saw for a major show was, what's his face? Joey Coy or whatever his name was. Kojoy. I don't know. I'm not going to bother to learn your name. Joe Coy. I don't care. He was not joking. I probably made that joke before. But no, I just thought it was a really well-run Oscars, tight, and like, it was good. Like, I mean, like the comedy bits, I didn't see a comedy bit that didn't work. So I was impressed. I mean, there's a couple like, okay jokes in the monologue, but I thought Jimmy's monologue was good.
He seems like a guy who's hosted the Oscars a few times.
Yes,
somebody said earlier, may have actually been a different New York Times article where they were saying he wasn't amazing.
You live in New York.
He's not great. It's just the only one I pay for.
Yeah.
That's why I never share Washington Post
articles. The Star
Tribune
thought that it was the best hot dish they'd had all year, okay?
But for real, they were saying that he, like their critic was saying, he was very confident. And it shows that he's done it a few times.
I honestly think the joke of the night was when he said, rip up that envelope after Emma Stone won.
It was brilliant.
It was like that, this guy has reps. He brought up probably I've heard him talk about it. It was horrifying for him. What happened? Like the Moonlight La La Land thing.
Oh, yeah.
Was he the host that year?
He was the host that year.
Yeah.
And it was because they had given Warren Beatty and Faye Dunaway. It was Best Actress. And so they saw La La Land and just said La La Land because they didn't realize.
Warren Beatty didn't say it. He was
confused. He threw her under the fucking bus.
I think he didn't handle it well because he was confused and he was looking to her to be like, can you make any sense out of this? But he shouldn't have done that. He should have said, this seems wrong, right?
This is the wrong. Yeah. But anyways, so that and everybody kind of thought La La Land was going to win anyway. So he probably just kind of they jumped to conclusion. But that was just such a brilliant like callback to that.
Oh, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was like that is when you are a good host, when you can that kind of thing.
So when it happened the first time, the other aspect to that is I heard Kimmel tell the story of that.
Yeah.
And he was saying that when there was this confusion, he was like, he's standing back there thinking somebody should figure this out. And he's like, oh, wait, I'm the host.
Yeah.
I've got to do something.
Yeah. So I was just overall, I was just actually really surprised at how well they did it. Like, I just think it, and it probably helps that, like, the movie that won was an extremely popular movie. The other really popular movie was celebrated in a way, you know, not with actual awards, but, you know, they should have gotten
two performances,
something. But
two
they got
performances. Two performances.
It did. Yeah. It won.
But they did a good job of at least highlighting the importance of that film. And I think they've just done a better job of that.
Yeah.
And I think that's fair. I mean, you know, people talk about snubs with that movie, but, the people we were hanging out with while watching it were like, that script was all over the place. Like, they liked the movie, but they were like, the script is nonsense. It's like, it's a ridiculous script. It makes absolutely no sense. There's so many points. It was like, where did this come from? The whole thing with Will Ferrell just fizzles out. Like, that storyline just says, like, it's not an Oscar-worthy movie.
Here's what they're saying. Though. The official word from the McNabb household is that we don't like how Barbie was represented and not happy that Ryan Gosling was the one that in a film about women was the thing that was really highlighted. And we don't know if Oppenheimer was really that great compared to Barbie. Okay. So there maybe have been an argument in this house last night about it. So I
vaguely remember a text from the McNabb household, though, saying that the character of Barbie wasn't set up to really be like that big of a deal. Like,
said that. I didn't realize, did that come out of the, I was saying that when I did say that.
Oh, you said that?
I mean, I don't know if Rob said it, but or I'm sorry, someone from the McNabb household.
Yes.
I did say when I saw the movie, I was like, it's no wonder Ryan Gosling was nominated. And that's not to say that, well, there's just, he is set up to score.
Yeah.
It's just like Melissa McCarthy and Bridesmaids. Yes. It's just like Robert Downey Jr. and Tropic Thunder.
Yes.
Those are outstanding performances because they stand out from the movie because of how they are written and set up.
Yeah. And that was what's confusing. It's like, well, you pay a lot of money for this athlete to do the thing they're good at. You can't get mad when they lead you to the Super Bowl. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, and so I was like, you know, and I can't say it, but it's like, I did think that Gosling was like the best thing in that movie. And I laughed
all these, like, moments he was given that were just like, you've got to hit a home run, and then he hits it, and they have America Ferreira. They give her a moment where she has to hit a home run, and she hits it.
Yeah, she
and
hits
they
it.
Don't have any other home run moments that they set their actors up for intentionally. This isn't a knock.
You know what my favorite joke in that movie is, though? It's when, like, when they try to distract the bros, and she says, hey, can you explain The Godfather to me? I thought that
it's a great, really funny script.
But I think my favorite part in that movie is, you know, like, the whole time you've set up, like, America and her daughter, and doesn't it seem like, for the most part, it seems like she's a single mom. Like, she's a working single mom with her daughter, and they're separated, and they're driving to Barbie Land, and then her daughter's like, hey, what about dad? And then they show her dad, and he's just, like, a nice guy, and, like, he's just, like, trying to learn Spanish, but he's not, like, a jerk.
I
he's
love not, that.
He's, not, like, he's just a milk toast.
He's just mid, a nice guy. It. Like, there's nothing bad about him. He's not, she's not a single mom. Like, you know, it's not
normal,
what you think.
Average white
there's
man.
Normal white man that loves his wife and daughter, probably.
Yeah, that is a funny moment. I think it's a really funny movie. I really enjoyed watching it. And I think Margot Robbie's great, but I think Greta Gerwig should have been nominated. I don't know who I would have taken out, but I think she definitely should have been nominated. And
like, adapted screenplay, I think she should have gotten that, because I do think it's IP and I think it's adapted. Sorry, Judd Apatow or so, whatever, but I think it's adapted. So because it's IP.
What one adapted?
Yeah.
It was American Fiction one,
which is
adapted,
great.
Which
is great.
I'm on board for.
Yeah. But I'm on board that one. But I think that she should have been nominated for adapted. So
they were adapted.
They were nominated.
Yeah.
Oh, uh-huh. I didn't think they were.
Yes,
they were, and Judd Apatow was saying it made no sense that they were nominated for adapted.
I was listening to NPR and they said the same thing yesterday, because they were saying that Barbie is no more adapted than Maestro, because it's just Maestro is just about his life. It's not an actual book or story that exists.
That's fair.
Because they're not adapting it from a book. That's why I don't think it should have been adapted.
Yeah, okay. Well, then I can see that.
At the same time, like, it, you know what? I enjoyed the movie. I think she should have been nominated.
I do.
I think Margot Robbie is great. I think Ryan Gosling was 100% right about what he said about her and Greta Gerwig not getting nominated. Mm-hmm. But to me, a bigger snub for lead actress was Greta Lee.
God, yeah. You know, that was my favorite movie of the year. So
her not being nominated was wild.
I have no idea why she wasn't nominated.
It's a great movie.
It's a great movie.
I was bawling on a Delta flight, people.
Yeah.
So.
Such a good movie.
Yeah.
Who would you take out?
Probably Annette Bening's amazing, but I don't know that I would nominate her for a movie
I've watched a little bit of it, but like I didn't watch it because I watched the documentary about Diane Nye. I mean, they literally filmed her doing it. So it's like I could watch that, the real thing happening.
Right.
Yeah. Like, I don't need to watch. I mean, I love Jodie Foster, but I'd rather watch North Country with Jodie Foster.
Right.
And yeah, and like, you know, yeah.
Yeah. So for lead, I would take out Annette Bening.
Yeah.
Not because I don't think Annette Bening's amazing. I'm sure she's great in it. I saw the trailer and I was like, well, of course she got nominated because she's Annette Bening. I'm sure she stuns in this movie, but no one talked about it.
Yeah.
But you know what I heard people talk about? Greta Lee in Past Lives.
Yeah.
So I kind of feel like maybe that's the movie that the lead should have been nominated for.
I probably would have nominated Margot too, by the way, just because.
Yeah, I just don't know who I would have taken out. I would have, if there was only one spot to give, I'd give it to Greta. If there were two, then Margot.
Yeah.
I think Margot was great in it. And that movie was too much of a lightning rod to not nominate the lead.
Yeah.
But I mean, it's also was an extremely competitive year.
Yeah.
So who knows? Trey, what were your surprises?
I guess I'll add to Rob's about this show being tight. Because the other thing is, it started a little bit late because of the protesters who are out, which I didn't even realize because I didn't.
I said there's 5 minutes. He's like, I'm not even kidding. We're 5 minutes over.
Yeah. And I started watching the East Coast feed midway through. So I didn't know they were late.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched the West Coast. So I didn't understand what his joke was until I was reading later. But the protesters caused him to be late and they still finished ahead of time and had to fill a little bit. And that's where what I think is an even better joke than rip up the cards was reading the tweet. And I saw the story behind that. When they had to fill some time, Kimmel said, I'm going to read this. And they're like, no, don't do it. And he says, I'm going to do it.
and he had one of the lines of the night with your past. Aren't you past your jail time?
Yeah,
that was. Yeah, that.
Trump's such a fucking idiot. if
they would just take 3 steps back and read that and be like, God damn, what a moron. Like, also, he was like, don't you have something better to do than watch me? Like,
right. Like, well, you, and he, it was like the end of the, how, like the telecat, like, just come on.
Where it's like, you know, I think Kimmel was better than good or competent or whatever.
I mean,
doing all this kind of stuff. But another thing that surprised me, and so my surprises were a little bit minimal because, full disclosure, the only nominated film that I saw was Oppenheimer.
Oh,
you haven't seen Barbie?
Not even American Fiction. Oh, good job.
I meant to see all of those, but you know, I just watched so much TV that I don't get around to movies in time, and then didn't have the time this last
week.
Which
TV specifically? And if it was Arrowverse. Over American Fiction.
No. Catching up on Succession and watching, you know, just current stuff. But
he was watching Legends of Tomorrow, everybody.
No. I tapped out of that show before they ended. But because I watched Oppenheimer, I saw Oppenheimer after the nominations were out. Mm-hmm. So I knew Emily Blunt was nominated. And look, everybody in that cast did great.
Well,
so I'm not surprised in her nomination from the standpoint of the quality of her work. But when I saw the length of her role as compared to like Florence Pugh or someone else, mm-hmm. that's what made me a little bit surprised that Emily Blunt was nominated.
But Florence was great in it.
Yeah. But again, quality was there. But I guess, well, the other surprise for me is just looking at the list of nominees for animated feature. Mm-hmm. The fact that I only knew or had ever heard of two of those movies, Spider-Verse and Elemental, and then I didn't know any of the three.
Oh, you didn't know The Boy and the Heron? Heron?
No, I didn't know that one for whatever reason.
We were
reason.
Like dead on. Like, we almost were like dead on together on that.
Yeah, I hadn't seen
Who's Getting Married?
Thing about it for some reason. It's Guy Love.
It's Guy Love.
Guy Love. He's mine.
Let me tell you something. Being in an interracial friendship in the mid 2000s, or, you know, 2005 to 2010 was our golden era. Okay.
It was. I mean, between
honestly,
Grubs and Sykes,
it was the heyday of silly white guy and silly black guy being best friends.
So, Rob, did you ever call Jason Brown Bear?
Yeah.
We've definitely done Eagle before.
Yeah, we've definitely done Eagle. Although it's easier for Jim to do Eagle for me.
Yeah, Jim is 6'8"
and extremely strong.
Yeah.
Yeah.
How did you all hear of that movie? Because again, I just haven't. I didn't see it on billboards.
People were
I didn't
just
see
talking
ads,
about it
I didn't
a lot.
Hear anyone talking about it.
Yeah. I mean, usually I will watch every once in a while. I'll catch the highly touted Japanese animation films, like, you know, like Spirited Away or some of those other ones
too.
Florence Pugh.
I haven't seen The Boy and the Heron yet. I'm aware of it, but yeah. I'm pretty sure she did a voice in it. I think,
right. Yeah, which is like, yeah. You know, everyone's talking about, oh, I forget her name from both Zone of Interest and Anatomy of a Fall. She's
I didn't realize Mueller. that lady was in both films.
Both films, but like Florence Pugh was in two major Oscar nominated films.
Yeah,
like, good for
and she's
her.
Gonna be in another one next year, at least one.
Which one is that?
Dune 2.
Oh, true.
Oh,
true,
my true. God. Yeah, Florence Pugh is definitely in Boy and the Heron. Let me look up Anatomy of a Fall. Anatomy of a Fall. My favorite Oscar nominated movie.
Really?
I'm not necessarily, I don't think it should have won Best Picture, but
I have not watched it yet.
She wants me to fall
it's,
from
but
the
it's
third.
On.
We live on the third does. Floor of our building and she wants me to fall.
Do you think it's weird that she keeps listening to Pimp? But or PIMP, yeah. I have not seen it yet.
Let me say something about PIMP, because when that movie won its first Oscar that night, or was it only, they started playing that song and I had forgotten about its significance to the movie. And I was like,
yeah,
how the hell are they playing this song for this movie?
Well,
it's such a serious movie. And then the rest of the night, I was like, oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. So, yeah, yeah. Like, they should just be playing PIMP for everybody.
Well, also, I think it's funny, like, Cousin gets up there to accept the her documentary, which I love that we both thought it at the same time. I was like,
I said it at the party we were at.
I totally said Cousin out loud. I was like, I totally thought it was him. He walked like very angrily, and like Megan was like, she was really upset because there was a woman with him and she was like, didn't like how they were walking and thought he was like being really aggressive. And then when he got up and talked, I was like, oh, that's why he's being aggressive, because he's mad. So, yeah.
When Jason sent the text to our group with the picture of him accepting and just said Cousin, I thought, that's the dirtiest thing ever, because here's a man talking about, I wish I didn't have to make this movie. I wish Russia had never invaded us.
Ukraine.
And Jason and Rob are like, Cousin.
Cousin. That's what we've. But so when he was done, he gave probably between him and Cord, I think they both gave two of the best speeches of the night.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But I thought that, so he gets off and it's very powerful. You know, they gave him time to talk. I appreciate they gave him time, and then he walks off and they start playing I'm Just Kin.
No, that killed
that
us.
That killed us. We were like,
No, it felt so inappropriate. So
just play any basic
Ricky
classical.
Minor, you're a great man. Play like the theme from Platoon or something. Like
something.
Like just play something different, you know? Like
No, the misjudgment there, which it was always going to be a misjudgment. If they were going to play I'm Just Ken after the feature documentary, that would never be appropriate. That's regardless of who won.
Right. No. Well, we might be getting ahead of it. We're starting to talk about like least favorite things here, but
I don't say that was a least favorite thing. I just thought it was hilarious.
Speaking of hilarious, though, I am noticing, and I wrote this in the newsletter that came out yesterday.
Mm. Nerdist.com newsletter. This is a comedy lifestyle, you know, thing.
Thank you very much. There is a trend that's been going on with the Oscars of comedies doing well, or at least like semi-comedies doing well at the Oscars. So this year, Poor Things did well. Barbie was nominated a lot. I consider that doing well. You can make a case for The Holdovers and American Fiction being comedies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I would say they're comedies. They were comedies. I'm sure there's someone who's
I would call like The Holdovers, which I have a story about. I would call that like a
dramedy,
like a dramedy. Yeah, more of a dramedy, but not
dramedy. Maybe
more comedy than like. We don't need to get into the bear discussion, but
dramedy. Then I call it a dramedy if it's more comedy than drama. And they were nominated a good bit and won. And last year, Everything Everywhere All at Once swept. That's
that
movie's comedy.
Hilarious
comedy sci-fi, but it's, you know, it's not like drama with comedy. It is straight up comedy. If you really look at it. Mm-hmm. And if it's not that, it's really sci-fi. In previous years, Adam McKay was nominated and won Licorice Pizza, another recent movie that really is more of a comedy than anything. So we're seeing this trend in recent years. So the question is, do you think this trend will continue? I will start with Rob.
I think that the thing that people forget is that the duality of life. And so there needs to be levity and there needs to be comedy and there needs to be joy. And, you know, I haven't seen The Zone of Interest. I want to see it. I will watch it. I don't probably think there's a lot of like humor. I don't know, maybe in a film about the Nazis next to Auschwitz, but, you know, like maybe there's I haven't seen Oppenheimer yet either. But, you know, I'm a
unintentionally funny moment of that movie.
Yeah, I think I know about it.
The thing about Oppenheimer is that it's not like this much more serious sort of turn from Nolan.
Yeah, but I think of like, you know, like Scorsese. I haven't seen Killers of the Flower Moon. I want to see these movies, but I feel confident I've done enough research on them that I feel like I can talk about them, you know, like any online expert. And but
Dr. McNabb, correct?
Yeah. Oh, please host the show with Dax Shepard.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's a good idea, actually. And
no hate.
I like him, but Scorsese always has humor. Like he always does a good job of. I think Goodfellas is hilarious at times.
There's even a joke in Schindler's List.
Yeah.
So like everything has a moment at least.
Yeah, but I think that people need that. I mean, I still think you need a little bit of drama and you need a story.
Mm-hmm.
I think like I don't like the film. I watched it. There's humor in like Green Book. You know, obviously you've got the humor background with the Farrellys making it, but you know,
the same with like Adam McKay's movies. Like there's a lot humor, of drama, but
there's a lot of drama.
It's so structured with comedy logic or humor.
Yeah.
Logic.
Especially like Big Short. And there's definitely some straight up like, you know, think about like in Vice, if you've never saw that, there's a scene where they decide that there's a conversation between Dick and what's his wife's name? We'll just say Miss Cheney. Yeah, Amy Adams. And like
Amy Adams,
the redhead. They do the scene where they're like discussing whether he should, you know, accept the nomination or like accept, you know, George Bush asking him to be the vice president. Mm-hmm. But they do it like it's a Shakespeare drama.
Right.
They change it so they could do it. You know, that's how they do
definitely
the,
utilize in Vice, which is his more dramatic movie. They definitely utilize comedy.
And there's
in
like,
that.
There's
but
like, there's
even
like
the, more comedic is his more recent piece, which is Don't Look Up, which got Oscar nominations.
Yeah. So, and that was a lot of comedy in there too. That,
I mean, that's
was so funny
like
when the world
straight
blew
up.
Up.
Comedy.
It's so funny when everyone died on Earth. there was a pretty good joke at the end with Meryl Streep getting eaten by an alien. But spoiler alert, whatever. I don't think we want like ultra depressing movies anymore. I don't think that we need that. We think we need, especially coming out of the pandemic, I think we need to smile when we cry. And so, yes. Yeah.
Also, yeah. Like the juxtaposition between humor and drama always enhances both of them.
Yeah.
Right.
Like, yeah. When Bob Saget died and they had his
in memoriam. Yeah.
What's that song? Keep a Fire Burning in Your Eyes.
The Jackson Brown song. Yeah.
And Jackson Brown came out and sang that, and everybody was destroyed. Mm-hmm. But Jackson Brown talked about how Bob wanted that to be played. Like, he had done a show with Jackson Brown and wanted that to be played before he came out. And he said, like, everybody laughed so hard at Bob's, you know, stand up mm-hmm. after that, because like there's, it does something to your heart to like, mm-hmm. like be broken and then healed by laughter, you know? Yeah. So,
well, even thinking about like, you know, I kind of opened with Good Will Hunting. Good Will Hunting is hilarious.
There's yes. a lot I of mean, funny
there
stuff
is
in that movie.
So many funny. I mean, Ben Affleck is the bomb, especially in Phantoms. But,
in Phantoms, yeah.
In Phantoms, especially. Too. But no, he is so funny. And in Casey Affleck, I know he's canceled, but he was so funny. I ordered a double burger. but that movie is hilarious. But also, you know, I mean, you got Robin Williams, you right, know, yeah. in it. And he's both like the most heartbreaking person in the movie, and he's the funniest person right. in the movie.
Yeah.
yeah. Yeah. I'll pile on to the examples using TV because I used to tell Jason, and I've probably said this to other people, and I think Jason and I in particular talked about this, that during the early 2000s, the funniest show on TV to me, other than Scrubs, was The West Wing. And the most tear-jerking show to me, other than The West Wing, was Scrubs.
Scrubs.
Oh my gosh, yeah.
And it was like the juxtaposition that Justina's talking about that they did. I mean, it was like that perfect balance. Like when
it was.
Dr. Cox went crazy because those patients died.
Yeah, that's a tough episode.
Or Brendan Fraser.
Fraser.
Don't even get me started.
Oh, Jesus. What a good punch. TV. What a gut punch up moment was. And it is. It's excellent. It's excellent work. And, you know, I was thinking, because I was researching this topic about recent comedies, and I almost included The Trial of the Chicago 7 because that movie's pretty funny.
Oh, Sorkin is funny.
Sorkin's pretty funny, and he uses comedy so much in his work that it's like, this isn't straight drama with a little bit of humor here and there just for levity. It's like kind of a comedy.
I mean, you know, like I've talked about, like, Few Good Men is one of my favorite movies of all time. Mm-hmm. There is a lot of love. I mean, you've got a freaking comic as the other lawyer. So, I mean, you've got Kevin Pollak.
Kevin Pollak, yeah.
And Kevin Pollak is hilarious in that movie, but he's also mm-hmm. serious in that movie too.
Yeah.
He really does think clearly with that bat.
Well, and then even when Cruise does the impression of Jack Nicholson, you know, what are you?
But that was also right after Tom Cruise had lost it, because he's like, or do I listen to the galactically stupid?
Yeah.
But then he just has that epiphany and it's
or jokes. even Social Network too. Like, Social Network is extremely hilarious as well.
Yeah, all of his work is really funny.
Yeah,
except for, ironically, Studio 60. No, I'm kidding. There are funny moments.
There's funny moments,
but not as funny as the other stuff.
No. Yeah. Well, Trey, do you think this trend of comedies at the Oscars will continue?
I think it's got to, for all the reasons we've said, but I think also, you know, the Utes are remembering that there are comedies in the past that have won Oscars. Two Utes out there,
right? But I mean, there's a big gap between My Cousin Vinny and I guess it was Bridesmaids that got nominated before Tropic Thunder.
No, Tropic Thunder was before Bridesmaids.
Okay, well, there's just not a lot in between these periods. Whereas the last few years, there's a lot of comedies.
You know, it kind of comes back to something that Cord says in his speech, what I thought was great, which is that Hollywood thinks that needs to make $200 million four quadrant films that play everywhere, instead of making more of the $5 to $10 to $20 million films. And that's where some of these comedies were.
Yeah.
And so I think that if Hollywood kind of revamps and sees, okay, ultimately, no matter what your opinion is, the superhero trend is going down, I think they need to be leaner about what superhero films they make.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they
and not even just superhero movies. I mean, you think like Godzilla, Oppenheimer. Like, it's if you're gonna, to me, I feel like when I heard that point, it was like, oh, yeah, if you're gonna make a $200 million movie, make it Dune, make it Oppenheimer, don't make it Fast and Furious or something
like that. Yeah, I mean, and I don't want to just knock on Marvel. I mean, because, yeah, like Fast and Furious or like another Jurassic World movie or Transform. Yeah. It's like, can you like just use some of that money for just give $20 million? I mean, you know, it's like for someone like, I would love to see Ryan Coogler make something else. Like, I don't need him. I want to see him make, because I know he can do great things. I would love to see him do something else. I would love to see some of these filmmakers scale it back down and make something more like the 90s and the 80s and, you know, and
70s, especially.
Yeah, 70, obviously the 70s, but like just make some more of these types of lower budget, but you can maybe get more people in the seats if it's something that it's just actually really good.
That Coogler example is good because it does seem like there's the trend of once a Coogler makes Fruitvale Station, then they graduate to Creed or Black Panther, and they never go. It's a true graduation. It's seen as going backward to do another Fruitvale,
right?
When it really shouldn't be.
It shouldn't be. And it wasn't that way for like a Spielberg, right?
Mm-hmm.
I completely agree with what Cord Jefferson was saying because I felt like we do need more of these kind of movies because look at what has been so relevant this last year, and it is the movies that he's talking about. The movies that were like $10 to $20 million budgets, those were super relevant this year. Outside of Barbie and Dune, and well, I guess
anyone but you is going to be like close to $100 million. I don't know how much that movie cost. It can't cost that much money,
right?
Like, you know, like make you know. I'm not saying it's great, but at least like they made something. Sure. Yeah, it was
like, are people talking about even any Transformers movies anymore? Like, but they're talking about American Fiction.
Yeah, they are.
They're talking about Past Lives. They're talking about Zone of Interest. Like, people are actually talking about these movies.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or like, I mean, like, well, just like go back to like anybody, our babysitter on Saturday night, she told me she's seen the movie 5 times. She loves it. And like, I mean, she's an 18-year-old. She's going to be a freshman in college next year. Like, it was like, this is her demographic. Like, she was like, you know, like, Glenn Powell was the greatest. I'm like, yeah, make like a ton of movies with him. He's charming as shit.
Yeah.
Like, yes, I agree. Like,
and even, I'm going to name a superhero movie, but it still exemplifies the point that you're making, which is Deadpool. Because it was a much lower budgeted movie.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And look at the impact that it had.
Right.
Right. Exactly.
Just like make good movies.
And you know what? And that didn't have, you know, and the reason why it was good is it didn't have to have a long story to it. You didn't have to have, you know, you could have a funny stinger at the end, but that was a truly funny stinger. Mm-hmm. Like, it didn't need to connect and all this. It was just like, again, that's why I get back to Marvel is just make one, just make this movie good. Don't think about the next one. Just make this one a singular standalone good movie. And
well,
and
I think Marvel's generally done a good balance of having the bigger picture in mind while focusing on making this one good. Well,
from phase 1 through 3, I agree.
Yes.
Phase 4, they've lost their footing a little bit.
They've lost it.
But yeah, just a little bit. I don't think it was like the death of Marvel.
Quantumanium.
I didn't think that was that bad.
Love and Thunder.
I thought it was bad, but like
Love and Thunder was bad, but because he was trying to be too funny.
They were mostly I agree with you, Trey.
I mean, Guardians. I know you love Guardians, but yeah, I mean that was good. But like, besides that,
Guardians was good, and Doctor Strange wasn't actually that bad. And I think they get the brunt of that criticism way too much when you've got Fast and Furious
and DC
and Transformers right there to criticize
for DC.
Yeah, for just like being the focus of what the industry does.
Yeah.
But Justina, do you have any final thoughts on this Comedies at the Oscars?
Just to add that hasn't already been said, but I will say it is my great hope and desire that comedy will one day enter the animated shorts category because
they're always
all devastatingly sad about child loss, SA, pets dying. Like, I cannot handle how sad the short animated features are.
I guess the last one I can think of that wasn't so sad was actually Kobe's Oscar-winning short, Dear Basketball.
That's sad now.
It's sad.
I mean, it's sad now, but it was a literal love letter to the sport.
No, no.
So
I agree.
It was heartwarming. So it might make you tear up in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but
I
completely agree. It would be nice to have some like charming, like fun animated shorts that didn't make me want to slit my wrist.
Yeah,
like, they're all so sad.
Yeah.
And for the Oscar for an animated short is Puppy Dying in Front of Children.
At the hand of mom.
Jesus Christ.
And now we move on to the category of least favorite moments. And I'll start this one off. I'm going to say the In Memoriam. Not because of the fact that it's In Memoriam. Like, obviously, should I enjoy that? No, it's In Memoriam. But do they have to butcher it with having so much busyness on stage when literally the focal point is supposed to be
the screen,
seeing the person that we are trying to honor? And I love the idea of putting all the names at the end so you can try to manage the issue that previous years have had of leaving people out. But when the camera is so damn far away that I can't read it, then you're a dumbass for doing it this way.
Right.
That don't need dancers on stage for this segment.
Yeah.
What were you thinking about during that song?
I was literally thinking, why can't I read what's going on? But what
were you not thinking about Will Ferrell singing that song in Step Brothers?
No, I didn't. But someone who was
that
at
was
the
all
party...
I could think about. Boats and hoes.
There was someone who was at the party we were at who was saying that song is so overused that it is all she could think about was like, could you have picked a better song that doesn't make people think about all these other things?
I'd actually had it on mute and then I turned it off mute and I was like, they're really using that song? Like, guys.
I didn't have that reaction at all.
Did no one see Step Brothers?
See, I didn't have that reaction at all. To me, it was fitting. I just thought
Billy Joel
Doo-Wop
sucks. Play something from the street.
They should have played PIMP for the In Memoriam.
That would have been a better choice to me.
Now, I didn't necessarily care one way or the other about the song. I didn't like all the stuff going on.
Yeah.
That was a distraction.
I'm 100% with you on that. The only thing I'd add, because you said everything I would say about In Memoriam. I mean, it's one of those lose-lose situations, because when you do it, you're going to leave somebody out because you've only got this amount of time.
Yeah.
And then you get pissed on for that.
Yeah.
But then you do it wrong by having the busyness.
Mm-hmm.
But there was one that I paid attention, because I was actually reading the names and what they said everybody was up to. And one that it caught me that was weird was the actress Joanna Merlin. But they said Joanna Merlin, casting director. I was like, what? So I took note of that so I could check later, because I knew of her as an actress. So I was like, maybe she's done more casting than she did acting. On IMDb, she's got 56 acting credits, 3 casting credits. And they just messed up. Like Law and Order, Good Wife, the movie Fame. What was the other one? Like the Ten Commandments. She was in all of those movies and shows. It's like casting.
I understand why they didn't acknowledge it by the shows, but if you're in those
Fame
those
and
two movies,
Ten Commandments,
then I feel like
and all that jazz did, and other movies like that.
Yeah, that's a mistake.
Yeah.
Rob, did you have any least favorite moments?
No, but I think that my least favorite thing will when Al Pacino came out, and I'm fine with him not reading the nominees. Actually, I kind of liked it. But
they
don't normally, right? No, I don't think. Usually they're so tight on time, they're like, just do this.
Yeah.
Plus, they've said them throughout the show.
Yeah, right. They've said them throughout the show. But I was just, really wanted him to just be like, I'm the winner of this picture. Because Florence Pugh's got a great. Sorry. I fucking love Heat so much. Al was a little weird.
Al is a little weird.
He's a weird dude. I'm more on the camp of Al versus De Niro, but I mean, I don't know. Then that's hard because then I'll think about it. And I'm like, no, De Niro was in Goodfellas. But he was a little awkward. I didn't know. I thought when he was describing it, I guess I was misunderstanding. I thought Francis Ford Coppola was coming out.
Oh yeah, because of the song.
Yeah, well,
I thought
no,
that too.
Because the way I thought he said winner for like Godfather Part Two, and so, but he just said nominated for Godfather Part Two or something like that, and
I
so
getcha.
I thought it was Coppola coming out, and I was like, yeah, you know, it's nice to see Coppola come out and stuff. And so I thought it was going to be him.
I liked that they, like, the audience gave him the love that they gave him for that. Yeah. And then it got weird. Justina, I saw your face during this moment when he was speaking, and your face looked like you were highly confused and also very disgusted. I mean, you look more confused.
Was it because he's 83 and has a baby?
So confusing to me. So very confusing.
You look like, what is going on right now?
Necessary. There's so many people who can present Best Picture.
Yeah.
And yeah. You know, that will know how to present it without saying my eyes are seeing. You know.
I was actually wondering, just to your point, I was wondering, did they not write a script for this, or did Pacino just ignore it?
Trey, I had a script, and God is an absentee landlord. I only do later period Pacino. I can't do early period when he's actually subtle.
My thing with it was, I think they need to stop having people who could be or are known to be wild cards present the biggest award of the night.
Have the Daniels come out. Why not have the Daniels come out and do it? Like, they won Best Picture last year. Let them do it again. Or, you know what I mean? Like,
or
you get,
like,
you get the best actor from the previous year.
Exactly.
Do it. Like,
right.
Why can't you have,
and
like,
I understand why they want to have, like, pedigree. Cause like Harrison Ford came out 1 year and everyone stood up, and like the year that,
and Jack Nicholson would do it or something like that. Yeah.
Or like, you know, when Faye Dunaway and Warren Beatty screwed it up. Like,
I mean, if they had them screwed it up, it was like, yeah, they were an amazing, you know.
Like, exactly. Yeah, but like, amazing. You know what? Stop doing that.
Well, just give them the right card and Beatty and Dunaway do right. But
well, they're sure.
I'm going to do Richard the Fifth for about an hour, and then I'm going to read this card here.
I think they should have someone who we know is not a little kooky doing
it. Did
we
know that he'd be a wild card as a presenter, though?
Yes. I've seen him on Letterman. He's a strange man, and you definitely can't have him come out.
Have you guys seen the film Jack and Jill? You know, I fall in love with a male version of, or female version of Adam Sandler. The day you monitor that film is I do a rap about Dunkin' Donuts.
There is some movie with him where he's ad-libbing, and it's not like one of the good movies that he's done. I can't remember what movie it is, though. But he's ad-libbing, and the other actor in the scene is looking at him, and it's not the character. It is the actor going, what the hell's going on right now?
Can it be the film?
And they kept that in the movie?
He did a movie where he's like a criminal pathologist or something, and Alicia Witt is with him, and like every time he talks, Alicia Witt is just like, obviously this is a podcast, her eyes are bulging out of her head. Like, she does
it
not...
might have been the movie that he did with 50 Cent. But nevertheless, it was still a movie he was in.
These bad guys are getting away with it, De Niro. I'm justified in my killing.
That makes me wonder if the script was that bad. Because if they kept those in the movie, I mean, because he does, like, the version of Ocean's 13 we saw, which is the most recent
Pacino movie I've seen. Well, that's because it's a good director who knows to get the right thing. But right. A lesser director.
Great, that movie.
Yeah, but a lesser director would have rose-colored glasses. And I was like, oh, anything he does is going to be amazing to them. So they're not going to know how to go, oh, we're not there yet. This actually isn't good. This is bullshit. And they don't know how to get that out of someone like him.
And I guess when you're just coming out to present, you're not getting a director who's saying, hey, man, we got this stuff for you.
Just next year, fucking make it Taylor Swift. I don't give a shit. Just make it someone
that
who's going to be a big
smart
deal.
That would have been smart.
That, like, everyone is fine with and likes, and they're not going to screw it up. Like, just do that from now on. Just don't make it a weirdo. just don't make, have it.
You know what? I got it. I got it. No. Al Roker. Who hates Al Roker? Just have Al Roker come out. He's a jolly son of a bitch. He comes out.
Yeah, here's what's happening in your neck of the woods.
In the woods. In your neck of the woods. Oppenheimer won Best Picture. People would love it.
It should be the Roker After Dark version now.
No. Have Kenan Thompson come out. Who doesn't like Kenan Thompson?
That's what I'm saying. Just like
have Kenan Thompson come out. Like, yeah.
Yeah. All right, well, let's move on to our favorite moments of the night. And Justina, let's start with you.
Okay, I have two, if I may.
Yes.
No. So my favorite moment happened early on. The award for Oscar for Best Supporting Actress for Daveen Joy Randolph. Ooh. Because it was just so wonderful, full of Oscars magic. And I cried. And
so did Paul Giamatti.
Yes. Yeah, so again, in a club, again, with another Hollywood elite, Paul Giamatti, me and him. But like, what takes the cake for my favorite moment was the pan to the dog from Anatomy of a Fall clapping with his
clapping,
paws.
Yeah. I love that one too.
That was huge for me.
I took that note.
And
down,
it was so fast. If you blinked, you would have missed it.
Yeah. We had to rewind. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Can I?
The dog in general for me, by the way, being there.
I know, just his presence.
Almost peeing on Matt Damon's star. That was Messi was great.
Yeah.
I have to tell my holdover story now. So Megan and I have two children. We had a babysitter for Saturday night. We didn't know what we were going to do because it was kind of a surprise. The babysitter's like, oh, I'm free. And we're like, hell yeah, let's do this. It's $15 an hour for a babysitter, in case anybody's wondering. So we decided we're going to go see a movie, looked at our local theater. Holdovers was playing. It was had one screening, 7:50. Hell yeah, let's do this.
Let's go.
Had a nice dinner. Gonna go see it. Sit down. We got a beer before it. We're like two normal human beings not watching a kid's movie in the theater. Like, I don't know the last time she and I have gone to go see a movie together. So we're excited. She's probably gonna fall asleep. I don't care because it's like the reclining chairs place. 7:50 comes, movie doesn't start. 8 o'clock, it still hasn't started. 8:15 or 8:10, it hasn't started. I go
$15 an hour.
They're on the clock, and I go in and I have to do a Karen moment and go speak to the manager. And I'm like, hey, the movie hasn't started. And they're like, we're working on it. We know it's an issue. And so I'm like, cool. Go back. I tell the people around me, like, we're all like survivors during a natural disaster. They said they'll be playing it soon. And then about 10 minutes later, which I'm not like mad because it's like they're not doing things to me on purpose, like something's wrong. They come in and they're like, the download isn't working. So we don't know. It could be 20 minutes or 40 minutes until we can show you the movie. So they gave us all free passes and stuff. This is when I became full on boomer. And I'm driving home and I'm just like, the download's not working. I remember a time when there was an actual physical film at the theater and you could watch it. They download the movie. Like, they don't even send a disc or like some like fancy cassette. Like, it's a download and it's not working. What?
And why are they waiting until like right before you're supposed to show the movie to download?
So again, nothing against you. Imagine Theaters. You're great. I love you. Your people are great there. You guys do a really good job of like showing different movies. They do cool things like surprise movies and they do genre cinema. I appreciate the theater. I think it's a great theater. I was just really, really mad.
See it that night?
No, we left because it's $15 an hour. We were on the clock and it was daylight savings time the next day. So we were going to lose an hour with two kids who don't believe in sleeping in on the weekends. Do they sleep in? Yes. This morning for school? Sure. But not on Sunday. So we didn't get to watch the holdovers and I'm heartbroken. It's not streaming anywhere yet. Not yet.
It's nothing on Peacock. It's coming to Peacock. Is that what
I don't
is?
Have Peacock. So I'm mad. So that's my, that I'm done. I'm done. This is,
I do
this
really want to see
this
that.
Has been parent section here for the podcast.
Thank you. So,
you have been talking about how bad you want to see that movie for a while.
Cause I love Alexander Payne. I love Giamatti, them together.
Or you're
again.
A white man.
Well, duh. Yeah. I'm as white as it can be. So yeah. Well, I mean, I'm not a Republican, but
it's Alexander Payne.
They didn't have any Merlot in the movie.
Oh, Merlot's actually good, y'all.
I like Merlot. I'm still a Pinot man, but I like Merlot.
I had also written down Daveen Joy Randolph's win and Lupita's acknowledgement of her, I thought both were very sweet. I also wrote down Bessie the dog, of, you know, an amazing actor, should have been nominated. True snub. I think we all agree I'm Just Ken won night. Yeah. Like that was amazing. That was amazing.
I was thinking they could have opened the show with that, the way Timberlake opened with Can't Stop the Feeling that Oscar year. And it would have really kept the energy up.
No, I think that it was perfectly placed because it was like,
give people something to wait for.
It was like Jaws. You didn't see the shark at first. They waited to show you that shark. And boy, did they deliver when they showed you the shark.
I agree with that too.
I agree with that. I think they should have waited because there was so much anticipation because there was talk about maybe he wasn't going to do it. And then he kind of like within the last couple of weeks said he would.
It was, and then killed it and was and like, it was totally immersive was the other aspect I loved about it. He used the audience, used the stage, used
some of the actors. Simu Liu was in it. And that
Doctor Who,
his name. I forget his name, but he's in the Bob Marley movie.
Benjamin Joy, but yeah, which also
Ben Adir.
That too.
Kingsley Benadir.
There you go.
Kingsley. Yes. I always forget that part. Yeah. He's not Ben Kingsley.
Well, and the guy that plays Doctor Who now, who was on a show that I really like, Sex Education. I don't know his name either.
Chuti.
Yes.
Yeah. He's.
I forget his last name.
Yeah. He's great. And
I love that they included them, and I thought that was fun.
I really wanted Michael Cera to be there. That was my only complaint. I really wanted Michael Cera.
Yeah. Me too. Me too.
But he's not Ken.
That's true. He's a
and Margot Robbie looked genuinely surprised and tickled by the way that he started the performance.
Yeah,
right behind her.
Well, he didn't.
So funny.
He didn't miss a note.
Nah,
the fact
crushed.
That they got Slash out there and Eddie
and Wolfgang Van Halen.
People don't. If you don't know, Eddie Van Halen's very talented son was there playing.
And Mark Ronson.
Ronson was there, and he didn't miss.
Who
a
wrote
note.
The song?
He didn't miss a note of the song. He nailed the song. And then I remember, I'm like, oh, yeah, he was part of, you know, the Mickey Mouse Club.
Right.
Yeah.
And speaking of Gosling, I like the blunt Gosling presentation when they were that Barbenheimer feud was funny. John Mulaney, I thought, was really solid. And there are some people saying like, oh, he should host the Oscar. They were like so surprised. It's like, oh, I guess you've never seen his monologues for the Independent Spirit Awards. Because he's done well with that. And I was happy that Robert Downey Jr. won. So those were my favorite moments. Rob, what are your favorite moments?
It was Nicolas Cage, goddammit.
He was great.
He went to the stage for 15 seconds and he caged the shit out of it.
Yeah, he did.
Oh, God.
Would I have done it? Hell yeah.
Yeah, I would have done
it. But you actually did it.
But you actually did it.
Bravo.
Bravo. Bravo. Just what the hell? What are we talking about here, guys? Nicolas Cage was on the Oscars. They acknowledged that they gave him an Oscar. Okay. There it is.
That's huge. No, that's huge.
We were
they
doing
wanted
a
to
bingo.
Rip his face off.
Yeah, so do you have anything else that you loved about the show?
I mean, to have Schwarzenegger and Danny DeVito out.
Oh, that
was
great.
The
twins.
But then the fact that they both talked about Batman and then Keaton was in the front row.
That was so
wearing
funny.
An ascot and killing it. Like, it was like,
Bring it on.
I honestly, everything, the last 30 years went out the window and I said, nope, that's my Batman. That's my
you know what made me really love that is knowing how those Batman movies went and that Schwarzenegger was actually
with
Clooney's Batman but there's he's still like no that Batman
that version of Batman
it was supposed to be the same universe but
yeah it was
not really
It had the same Alfred, but that moment was fantastic. It just Keaton and he's such a good actor. Was he really mad? I don't know.
I was hoping that they were going to do more with the Beetlejuice reunion moment. It was just, they just came out and they had a couple jokes, but no real references to Beetlejuice. Like I was hoping there would be,
there's a new one coming out, right?
Yeah, there is. Yeah. Well, I thought the telecast was fun. I know some people are like, Jimmy Kimmel's jokes, they're just milquetoast, simple, easygoing jokes, but they landed, so who cares? And it's like, well, you know, he was solid. It's hard to do what he did.
Yeah, because he did the right level of making fun of the industry without going so far that it would hurt people's feelings.
In the room.
I don't want to dog on people previously, but here's why he's a good host. He clearly watches the movies.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, it goes back to the, I think he had one of the best jokes he's ever done is that the happy ending came in the middle of Moonlight.
Yeah. That was a pretty solid.
The only one of the nominated movies with a happy ending was Moonlight, and that was in the middle. Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so that was, so he made some jokes that, like, clearly he did the research and stuff, like, even off the cuff stuff. He clearly watches the movies. So I think Jimmy Kimmel's great.
Yeah, because it's the off the cuff, because you can always say that in the monologue, it's, you know, maybe someone on the staff watched the movie or whatever. Yeah. But it's the off the cuff stuff that shows that he really.
I will say, not to shatter any glass here, but I mean, they do toss lines to people backstage. Like, they'll be.
They do. I know they do that, but it's.
But when you're out there and something's happening and you go, like, oh, rip up that envelope for something like that.
Yeah.
Or like, isn't it past your jail time? Like, you know. It's still
on
like
a joke
a
that they didn't
thing.
Even want him to do.
Right.
That too. Yeah. So,
Well, I do. I think he's a good host. I would be interested in seeing Mulaney do it next year.
I would
that'd be fun.
It would be nice to get Mulaney just to switch it up.
Because you're not really doing the Billy Crystal style. Cause you could do Billy Crystal every year when it was the sing and dance number at the beginning or immersing him in the movie. But when it's the more standard form, like of Jimmy Kimmel, I think it's better to mix it up a bit more.
Agreed.
Trey, what were your favorite moments?
So I had same ones that you named, and with the Mulaney one, talking about if not for sound, we wouldn't have these best quotes. Like, he worked with my mom in the Amazon.
He's a Madam Web.
Oh my God, the Madam Web. Yeah.
But I knew it. And I was like, why is he quoting the quote, this line from the trailer? But that, I mean, it's just so hilarious now, to the point that I do agree with what Rob said in a text. We need to pay money to watch that movie. So
apparently, here's the bad news.
Talk.
She doesn't actually say that in the movie.
What?
Oh, it's only in the trailer?
It's only in the trailer. I don't think she actually
says
it.
There's some other lines.
Oh.
That are pretty funny.
I can't wait to watch it. I can't wait
to watch
it. Yeah,
we definitely have to watch it so we can just kill it on a future pop talk.
Yeah, I agree.
But I also like just the fact that they brought five previous winners on for the major, you know, acting categories and have each of them kind of, honor the person they were speaking for. And the fact that so many of them talked about my friend so-and-so, it made me more curious, how did they pick who is going to do whom? Mm-hmm. But it was really nice. And like Sam Rockwell being the one for RDJ,
that
worked really well.
Yeah.
Justin Hammer.
Yeah.
Yeah. Why was Mahershala not the one speaking for Jeffrey Wright? I was a little upset about that. Not upset, but I was a little like, come on, guys.
Well, like I said, I don't know how they picked who was going for whom. So I don't know what that was about. Unless it was, did they ask the nominees who's someone who won before, who you want to kind of honor you? Because they do that, like if you're inducted into a Hall of Fame, a sports Hall of Fame, they ask you.
They all said Denzel, and they were like, guys, we just can't have them if you all say Denzel.
Yeah. But another speech, you all have already talked about speeches that were great. But the one that got me emotionally, and I'm not exactly sure why, was Emma Stone.
Oh God, yeah, she killed it when she
talked
about her
daughter. She was great.
Yeah.
It was like from even the beginning, like before she talked about like her daughter and stuff like that. Just I think it was the emotion coming from her and the level of surprise that
but
she
also
had for it,
the humility of like, my dress is broken.
Yeah, and
she's,
I think it's because
best.
Of I'm
I
just kidding.
I think she is like a universally loved person, and so I'm glad she won again.
Yeah, another favorite that I almost forgot was John Cena's bit.
Yes,
yeah, that was
a
funny moment. Yeah,
that was great. That was probably that could have been the funniest moment of the night.
Yeah, He's like, I can't lift the card.
He did well with that. He did well with that. He's very funny.
He's very funny.
All these wrestlers who are like got this big persona and are like
they got the chops.
Batista is in it when he's in like the Marvel movies he's in. He is like so locked in and good. And John Cena is so there when he's playing these ridiculous roles, but he's like so funny as Peacemaker, and he's like he's really solid. Who knew?
He commits to it.
He does. Right.
And The Rock, I'll give him some love too.
Yeah. My last of my favorites is I can't say the actual pronunciation, but in parentheses, A Song for My People, the song from Killers of the Flower Moon.
Yeah, I don't know.
Because the way that it came, I thought it was really nice that they did it from a clip from the movie without officially announcing it. And it's just the people drumming on the stage. And they go, that was pretty powerful to me.
Yeah, that was a great moment.
I saw a video of Lily Gladstone standing during that. And she's the only one standing, which is fine.
Is she from that tribe? I've forgotten.
I don't know, but I feel like yes, like she was cast because she is of that tribe.
I don't know if it's of that tribe.
Is it Osage?
Is that Osage? Yeah.
Oh, but she's from Montana, so she might not be Osage.
She might be Ojibwe. I'm not positive.
But I would kind of consider it similar to here's an ESPN story going back a ways. When I was doing Black History Month, one of the shows that we came up, I kind of had a brainstorming session, what's a way that we can really celebrate this and make it a bigger thing. So we did these roundtable discussion shows. And my idea was to take it to an actual HBCU because, I just thought it's appropriate. And we did it at Morehouse / Spelman the first year. And we did it in the MLK auditorium. And I wanted to end the show with Lift Every Voice and Sing, which is the Negro National Anthem. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the people on the staff, on the production staff, they didn't really know the song that well, weren't that familiar with it. They were kind of pushing back because it's like it kind of kills the flow of the show, blah, blah, blah. But I fought to make sure it stayed in. And so it stayed in. And it turned out that everyone loved that we ended with that. But the connection I'm drawing to Lily Gladstone standing is that when you're at an HBCU, and you play Lift Every Voice and Sing, they stand like it's the national anthem with their hands over their hearts and stuff like that. And the director and producer of the movie, of the roundtable show rather, they didn't expect this. They didn't know this was about to happen. Mm-hmm. And I kind of didn't necessarily know it was going to happen either because I didn't go to an HBCU. I just knew the significance of the song. But when they saw everyone standing, the director said, well, it is an anthem. But like they felt that power to it, and I'm thinking that's probably the connection, similar type connection Lily Gladstone had to that song.
It was the same experience that Rob has when a Macklemore song comes on.
He has to rise to his feet.
Listen,
I'm gonna pop some tags.
You don't know what it's like to be a straight man and tangentially think about homosexual people and like want to write a song about them, but make it pretty clear that you're into chicks. And he finally came out and did it. And
what joke would you have made if I had said Coldplay instead of Macklemore?
You don't know what it's like to consciously uncouple with someone who may or may have not cut someone off on a ski slope. According to a jury of their peers, she didn't do it, but her head was in the box at the end of 7. That's all I'm saying.
All right. What would you have said if Jason had made the joke that it was John Mayer?
Oh,
you don't know what it's like. If you're someone who has to make a lot of faces when they play guitar, I had someone on VH1 make a lot of faces when they play guitar.
There it is. Thanks so much for being on the podcast again.
Hey, and thank you, movies. Thank you.
I'd just like to thank the movies.
what song would you want to play off you during your Oscar speech?
P.I.M.P.
Okay. Oh, I'm just Ken.
I'm just Ken. Yeah. I would like a very slow version of Jurassic Park. Like, na, na, na,
na, I'd want Andrea Bocelli to sing I'm Just Ken.
Yeah.
No, I want Andrea Bocelli to sing the lyrics that I wrote for Jurassic Park. There are dinosaurs. Yes, they're dinosaurs. They are back and really pissed.
Oh, that's great.
That was a good one.
No controversies, just absurdity. There should be no controversies after this episode. I think everyone should be okay with the joking around that we do. No issues whatsoever. None. Okay? Don't hate us online. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram at There It Is Pod, and subscribe to our YouTube channel at There It Is, and follow me on Twitter at Jason Farr Jokes, and on Instagram at Jason Farr Picks, and on Threads at Jason Farr Picks. Even though you write on it, it's still how you say it. It's at Jason Farr Picks, and I'm sorry for that. Also, subscribe to our comedy lifestyle newsletter and support us if you can. We have a Patreon and a PayPal. Go to thereitispod.com for newsletter and support info. Links in bio. Until next time, be good to each other.
The music for the theme song was created by Neil Brooks. The rap was written and performed by Nick Acevedo. The logo for There It Is was created by Jeff Prater. The There It Is podcast is produced by Jason Farr.